heard it. I've heard these words. I've heard them from my own lips and from the lips of others. I've heard these kinds of words in my own heart. And I've heard these kinds of words in conversation with others. Maybe it's related to your job. And something like this comes out. What's going on here? I give the company the best years of my life. I work hard. I put in an honest day's work, just like the Lord wants me to. And then that conniving shyster gets the promotion over me just because he got in good with the VP, buddied up to him. And they expect me to continue to plug away, churning out profit for them. They got another thing coming. This is clearly not working out the way I thought God had showed me it would play out. Maybe it's in your relationship with your spouse. This isn't fair. I have tried. I have given. I really thought that this marriage was what God wanted. I really thought when we got married it was God's will for us, but I must have been wrong. Look at how things have turned out. I missed it. We missed it. You missed it. God missed it. This is not what I want. This is not fair. This doesn't make sense. God cannot be... I am not doing this anymore. Maybe it's with friends. When something rises and words are said, you think you can talk to me like that? Is that what friends do? I really thought we were doing life together. But it's obvious that I'm giving way more in this than you are. You are just taking advantage of me over and over and over. Well, enough is enough. I am not in this friendship to be abused. God does not put us in such situations. This is over. Or maybe it's you're looking at your parents. And the thoughts run through your mind and you say, this is what a Christian home is supposed to be like? You've got to be kidding me. Just because you're the parent, you got some right to lay all these rules on me? This is not what I thought growing up in a Jesus home was going to be like. I can't wait to get out of here. When I have kids, I am not going to treat them the way you treat me. It's not fair. I hear those words. Those thoughts run through my heart, my mind. I hear words like that come out of my lips. Life is hard. Charlie reminded us of that. Life is hard. Life will include difficulty and disappointment, setback and suffering, hardship and injustice, trial and temptation. It is what it is. Life is hard. And it's true, even of those who have a relationship with the living God. That's part of what we're seeing. Life can be hard. The Scriptures remind us, whether you dip into the Old Testament or dip into the New Testament, you see, life can be hard. There's trouble. There's difficulty. It doesn't make sense sometimes. We're on this journey with Joseph, one of the patriarchs, one of the great men of faith. How are things playing out for Joseph? Not very well. Life is hard for him. Yeah, here's why we're in Genesis. From week to week, we're working our way through passages of Scripture. Right now, we're in the book of Genesis, and we're traveling with Joseph through his life. Why? Because Joseph has a relationship with the living God and is trying to understand how do we live life with the one who is with us when life is hard. Joseph is giving us a picture. He's honest. It's real. This is not a made-up story. This is about a man who really lived in far less than ideal circumstances. What have we seen so far in Joseph's journey? It starts with a dysfunctional family. I mean, massively dysfunctional. An ineffective father. His mother is dead. He lives with stepmothers and stepbrothers. He is hated by his brothers. He's abandoned by those who should have cared for him. In fact, when he has need for spiritual insight, he goes to the only people who could, in fact, talk to them about the living God, and they turn him away. His life is stolen from him. His future is stolen from him. He is sold as a slave into a foreign land. There he tries to make the best of it, but he's falsely accused and ends up suffering punishment for the very offenses he was trying to avoid. And to make matters worse, underneath all of this, Joseph has heard from God. He's had dreams about how wonderful his future is going to be. Yeah, right. Life is not playing out well for Joseph. Joseph was 17 when we first started his story, when he is sold into slavery by his brothers. Based on the chronology in the book of Genesis, where we're picking up the story today, he is somewhere in his late 20s. For 10 years or more, he's been a slave, and then a falsely accused slave thrown into prison, and then he's made a slave of other slaves in prison. Boy, this is the fulfillment of Joseph's dream. Life is hard. Joseph is living a very hard life, and I want to watch him live. Genesis chapter 39, that's where we're going to pick up his story and try to make sense of how is it that he lives in the midst of difficulty, hardness. I'm going to go back to Genesis 39, verse 20, and pick up from where we were last week and then read through chapter 40. Chapter 39, starting verse 20, and Joseph's master, that's Potiphar, that's the one who bought Joseph. Joseph's master, Potiphar, took him and put him into prison. Why? Well, because Potiphar believed his wife, who was lying, conniving, and scheming. Things went bad for Joseph. And Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. Don't think American maximum security prison, color television, exercise yard, 3 good meals a day. Don't think that. Everything we know about this prison, it was a hole in the ground. It was miserable. In fact, Joseph will later use the word pit to describe it. It's the same word that's used to describe where his brothers had cast him, into the dry well. Don't think nice place. Think as bad as you can. And Joseph's masters took him and put him in a prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph. Like Charlie said last week, I'm thinking Joseph's got to be saying, stop being with me, Lord. Please, no more. This witness. But he doesn't. But we're told that the Lord was with him. And so Joseph steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison then put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Great! Now I'm in prison where I used to be a slave, and now I'm in prison where I at least could lay my head down on a cold, hard rock, and now they give me more work to do. They're in prison. I'm not in charge of everything in the prison. So what if I don't do that? What will they do? It's a hard life. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, Joseph was the one who had to do it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. Now, sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king, that's the guy who tasted food for the king of Egypt, and the baker committed offense against their lord, the king of Egypt. And the Pharaoh was angry with these two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard. That's Potiphar. He is the captain of the guard. So these two guys are put under Potiphar's responsibility and then put into the prison where Joseph was confined. So then the captain of the guard, Potiphar, appoints Joseph to be with them so that he would take care of them. And they continued some time in custody. And one night they both dreamed. It's literally, they dreamed a dream. They dreamed a dream. That's the same language that Joseph used when he described to his brothers what happened. Last night I dreamed a dream. Two guys come to Joseph and go, hey, we dreamed a dream. One night they both dreamed a dream, the cupbearer and the baker, the king of Egypt, and they were confined to the prison, each his own dream, and each dreamed with his own interpretation. And when Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw they were troubled, so he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in custody in his master's house, "Why are your faces downcast today? Like we're chained in a hole in the ground, Joseph." But Joseph steps in and goes, "So why so downcast, guys?" And they said, "We had dreams, and there was no one to interpret them." And Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell your dreams to me." So the chief cupbearer told the dream to Joseph and said to him, "In my dream, there was a vine before me, and on the vine were three branches. And as soon as it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and the clusters ripened into grapes. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand." And Joseph said to him, "This is the interpretation. The three branches are 3 days, and 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly when you were his cupbearer. Only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into this pit." Well, when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was favorable, he said to Joseph, I also dreamed a dream. There were three cake baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket, there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating out of the basket on my head. And Joseph answered and said, "This is the interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head." Now, he says it just the same way he did with the cupbearer. I think the baker is listening. Three baskets, 3 days. Pharaoh's going to lift up your head, yes, but he says it this way. "And in 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you." That's how it reads. I mean, "Are you going to lift up your head?" And I think he's thinking, "From you. And hang you on a tree. And the birds will eat the flesh from you." On the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all his servants and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. And he restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hands. But he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them, yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. 41:1, for 2 years he forgot him. This is not a good story in my mind. When you look at this, it's easy to get caught up in the interpretation of the dream, the dream and the interpretation of the dreams. That's, I think, the background for the story. What's really important in chapter 40 is how Joseph lives. That he interpreted the dreams, that's what happened. But how does he live? Because, you see, when I look at this, I would not have acted like Joseph acted. I think I would have acted differently. I think Joseph had every right to want to be left alone. I think Joseph has every right to want to be left alone. He has been taken advantage of, ignored, abused, falsely accused, thrown in prison, all been done by Potiphar most recently, and now two prized prisoners get sent to the jail. Potiphar assigns Joseph additional work in prison care for these two prisoners. I think Joseph has every right to say, "Do you a favor? Leave me alone. I tried to do good for you, and you threw me here." And so now Potiphar comes and says, "We got two prized prisoners, Joseph. I'd like you to take care of them." I think Joseph has every right to say, "Leave me alone. I'm not helping you. Do you a favor?" Absolutely not. I think Joseph not only has every right to be left alone, I think Joseph has every right to be caught up with his own trouble. You heard it said, misery loves company. I don't think actually that's quite true. I don't think misery loves company. I think misery likes to one up. Or it gets one down, other misery. Do you know what I mean? It's like, so you're on a business trip, and you've gone to the airport, and your flight got delayed. And when you get back, somebody asks you how it went, and you say, "I was in the airport, and I got delayed." And before you can finish your story, you know what they're doing, right? They're going, wait. Let me tell you about when I was in Dallas. There's this wanting to get one worse than that. We tend to do that, you know? You have a run-in with the government, like who doesn't? you have a run-in with the government, they don't feel like you're getting treated right, and you start to diss what the federal government is doing or the state government is doing. And when you share those stories, what do people think? Gang up. You think that was bad? Let me tell you how bad it was for me. Two guys get sent to prison because they offended Pharaoh. Why is Joseph there? He did nothing wrong. It's just been abuse and maltreatment. And I think Joseph has every right to say, injustice, you don't know anything about injustice. Leave me alone. I think he has every right to want to be left alone and every right to be caught up with his own troubles. And the last thing is, I think Joseph has every right to be done with dreams and visions and hearing from God. I mean, I think just naturally, I would think when two guys show up and go, I dreamed a dream, I think the hair on the back of Joseph's neck might have stood up. Dreams? No. Let me tell you, last time I talked about dreaming dreams, it went really bad for me. I'd like nothing to do with that. I think Joseph has every right to say, dreams? You've got to be kidding. What happens with dreams? Nothing. In fact, since my dreams, things have gotten worse and worse and worse. Now, it's less promising now than it has ever been. I don't want to hear about dreams. Do you know what happened to me the last time I thought about dreams? I mean, Joseph has every right to be done with dreams and visions and hearing from God. You see, this is not a made-up story. This is a real person living real life, and I'm trying to just get my heart into this situation, because when life is not going the way that I think it should, when life is not going the way that I think is fair, you just might hear me say, just leave me alone. You don't have any right to ask of me after the way you've treated me. Clearly, you don't know how wrong I have been treated. You are so clueless about how hard my life has been. And don't bring God into this mess like he really sees or gives a rip about what's going on. I thought I had been listening to him and following him. But clearly, because of the way things have been playing out, and it didn't do me a lot of good. That's where we live sometimes. That's what it feels like when life is hard. But Joseph doesn't respond the way that I would have anticipated. As we've seen, Joseph is living with the God who is with them in a very, very hard place. And the result is, he responds very differently to life than I would have if I'd been living in his sandals. You see, I think what's going on here is that Joseph is the kind of man he wants to be. That if Joseph is the kind of man God wants him to be in spite of the circumstances. Joseph is the man he wants to be in spite of the circumstances. Sadly, so often, I let what is happening to me and how others treat me become the determinant of the kind of man I will be. Rather than be who I am in the midst of difficulty, I let difficulty define me. Joseph didn't. He allowed the reality of life with the God who is with me shape how he will live in the midst of very hard circumstances rather than letting the circumstances define him and shape the way he'll live. So if we're not letting the circumstances of the situation define us, how might we live? What might it look like to live well in hard circumstances in the witness of God? A couple of observations, and that's all they are. And this is a story of a man's life. This is not a set of principles or steps to follow, but it is a model, an example. And so I look at Joseph's life here in Genesis 40 and try to understand, so how does he then live in the difficulty, in the reality that what defines him is his relationship with the living God? Here's the first thing I think about when I think about Joseph in this situation. Realize that even when your life may not be working out the way you hoped, God may still be interested in involving you in what he is doing in the lives of others. Joseph seems to get that. even when life is not working out the way you hoped, God may still be interested in involving you in what He is doing in the lives of others. Life is not going for Joseph the way he'd like it to go. But God's still doing stuff, and Joseph seems to realize maybe God is still going to do stuff. Listen, unless you are convinced that you are an infallible interpreter of God's will for you, unless you have concluded that the way that you are writing the story of your own life is the only one that will make sense, or is the only way that the situation will be redeemed in order to bring God's glory, unless you are an infallible interpreter of God's will for you, then it is really possible that God has something to do and something for you to do in the midst of the difficulty. Don't conclude that your frustrated dreams means God is done. It's not. God might really want to make Himself known through you in the midst of the very hardest trouble you find yourself in. After all, He is interested in people becoming impressed with Him and not with us. It's not that we have it all together and our life is playing out just as we planned to draw people to the living God. It is that in the midst of not knowing how it's playing out and not seeing how it's not coming together, that we still make much of God, that they become impressed with Him. Realize maybe He's still doing stuff. And that would then lead me to the second observation I see about Joseph, that is, he's attentive to what God brings across his path. Be attentive to what God brings across your path wherever you find yourself. It's very clear Joseph would rather be somewhere else. Don't want to be in prison. When he interprets the dream for the cupbearer, when you get out, if there's any way to say a good word for me so I can get out, but while he's there, he's there. I don't live that way very well. While he's there, he's there. When you find yourself in a situation where things are not going the way you had hoped or wanted or wished or dreamed, seeing as you might not yet fully understand what God is up to, be attentive to what God opens up in front of you where you are. Because either God knows what He is doing, and He is with you even in these difficult circumstances, or you're on your own. You'll have to figure it out for yourself, and if anything's going to be made of this, it's up to you. Those are the two options. Joseph opts for living as if God really knows what He is doing and that He is with him even in the midst of this very difficult circumstances. So, pay attention to what's there in front of you and live, be the person. Don't withdraw. This is too hard. Don't withdraw, but lean in. Don't be self-absorbed with disappointment that it's not playing out, but be attentive to, now what, Lord? I don't get it. I don't understand. My dream doesn't seem to be coming to pass, but You are still God and You are still with me, so now what? For Joseph, it's interpreting other dreams. He's not ignoring the bad situation. He does want out, but nevertheless, while he's there, he is there with God, there, apparently, for years in prison. Not just a slave, but now a slave in prison. Not just a slave in prison, but now having to work for other slaves who are in prison. And now two big shot prisoners are entrusted to his care, and he steps right into it. As if it's possible that God is still doing something in the midst of all of this trouble and difficulty. He acts like God is still interested and able to involve him in spite of Joseph's unfulfilled dreams, in spite of the disappointments and the trouble and the hardship. When things are not going well, when things are not going well in our lives, we can either hold on to our read of how it's supposed to go, how life's supposed to happen, what I thought the dream was all about. We can either hold on to that and we'll push against the circumstances and we will push against God, or we'll go, don't quite understand how it's not playing out that way, but this is where I am
And this is whose I am, and I'm going to live here.
You're either going to hold on to and force the interpretation and the playing out of how you think it's supposed to go, or you will hold on to the living God in the midst of the difficulties. Will you let the circumstances define who you will be? Or will you let your relationship with living God define who you will be? Will you live as someone who has life with the God who is with him, with her, in spite of the circumstances? Jesus has a commentary on this. I don't know that Jesus was specifically thinking of Joseph, but I think it fits so very well. Matthew chapter 5, Jesus is talking about life. And he says, you have heard it said, chapter 5, verse 38, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Someone treats you badly, but I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. Wait, you want to throw me into prison when I am not guilty and leave me there and then want me to help you out? Okay.
But Joseph does. Okay.
And if anyone should sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who asks of you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. You've heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But Jesus says, I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Why should we live that way?
Because it'll change them.
Because it'll make life better. No. Amazingly, Jesus does not say live that way so that they will be changed or so your circumstances will be different. He says live this way so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. You don't let the circumstances define who you are. You don't let the way others treat you define who you are. You be who you are in relationship to the living God in the midst of the hardest of circumstances, and you get to grow up to look like him. That's what Jesus says. And Peter got it. In 1 Peter, Peter writes, good friend of Jesus, and Peter sees it. He's writing in 1 Peter chapter 2 about, he's writing specifically about slaves and masters and that relationship, but what he says has bearing on every relationship that we live in. He says in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 19, this is a gracious thing. This is a commendable thing. When mindful of God, when my attention is on him, when mindful of God, one endures sorrows while suffering unjustly. That's a good thing, he says.
Peter, explain that to me.
He says, for what credit is it if when you sin and are beaten for it, you endure? What credit is it to you if you do bad stuff and your life goes badly and you endure that? He goes, but that's no big deal. You just do what you deserve. But what about Joseph? He did right and suffered for it. What about when you work hard and the boss overlooks you? What about when you give to your spouse and he ignores you? What happens when you faithfully love and he pushes you away? What happens when you care for your kids and they don't respond graciously? What happens when you do good and suffer for it? Peter writes and says, but if when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God, for, he's going to explain why it's a gracious thing, not because it changes them, not because it changes the circumstances. This is a good thing because you have been called to this. Because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example so that you might follow in his steps, who committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. The only one who should have always been treated right was treated poorly. Miserably poorly. And somehow we all affirm that was the work of God that Christ suffered. It's just my suffering that I don't think God has anything to do with. It's just my suffering that I think is unfair. It's the way that you treat me that I think God's not part of. That's why I want out. That's why I pushed back. I don't get it.
Joseph did. Joseph got it.
Don't choose to be who you're not because the circumstances aren't what you want them to be. Right? Don't choose to be someone other than who Christ is making you to be because the circumstances are not playing out the way you'd like them to be. In the midst of the hardest of circumstances, be who Christ is making you to be. Joseph is living that. In your work, when they don't treat you well, do you work hard because it is who you are in Christ? Or you work hard because you're hoping things will play out better for you, and when things don't, then you bail. Well, then you're letting the circumstances dictate who you're going to be. In your marriage, are you loving your spouse because that's who Christ is making you to be, a lover, an extravagant lover? Or, as soon as it becomes hard, when there's a little bit of pushback, when he's not doing what you think he should do, when she's not responding the way that you wanted her, do you bail? Do you let the circumstances and their reactions to you determine for you who you'll be? Or do you live with the God who is with you and let that relationship define how you'll do life? It's a story that we're given about a guy who lives well in the midst of difficulty. It's not easy. It's not simple. There are not a couple of, take these steps and it'll all be better. But there is some massive truth here. Joseph decides that life is better lived, anchored in his relationship with the God who is with him. Shapes all that he does. Shapes how he lives.
I'm just inviting you to that
this morning. Live that
in the midst of the difficulty.
Let's pray. Joseph got it, Lord, in his soul, because it's expressed in his living. I don't get it sometimes. I don't always live well in difficulty. I push back against you. I want to change everything else. And I'm not very much interested in having you change me. So I live with you in the midst of difficulty. How sweet it would be to know what it's like to live with you in the midst of the hardest places in our lives. That would be the comfort I look for. That would glorify you. That would be good for my soul. It would be living well in the story that you're writing.
Draw us to this.
So that no matter how the rains come in our lives, no matter how the winds blow, no matter how the storm comes, no matter how troubled we might be, that we would hold tenaciously onto you and affirm, that's my good. That's my good. Being in relationship with you in the midst of the hardest.